Science Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of the Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We are broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is June 8, 2017. Most just don't realize that, but we are in that time of the end. And that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin in the world and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice tonight. If you need help after this program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news, Wichita Mission Church radio program archives, contact information, all on our ministry hub, which is very simply prophecyhour.com. That's prophecyhour.com. Excuse me. Anyway, remember, prayer requests can also be sent by United States Postal Service. Send them to us. We'll take them to Mission Church, pray over them, also by email. Include your phone number, and we'll call you, and we will not solicit you for donations through any contact information that you share with us. We do have a form on the right-hand side of Prophecy Hour, MessiahsBranch.com pages. You can use that form to make contact with us or a prayer request or whatever. Anyway, remember, we are a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally, on YouTube, and on some FM stations, so pray about supporting airtime. On another note, let's thank our listener base. It is worldwide in places like Jerusalem, Israel, Tel Aviv, Israel, Stockholm, Sweden, Beijing, China, Perth, Australia, and of course cities in the good old United States such as Detroit, Michigan, Atlanta, Georgia, Los Angeles, California, Jacksonville, Florida, Las Vegas, Nevada, as well as Wichita, Kansas, which remains the largest group of listeners to our radio programs, at least when they go to podcasts later tonight. So anyway, thank you to our radio supporters or people that listen to us. Amen. Now prayer will bring on night's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name I pray. Father, I pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor our guest will. So Father, please, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, give everyone ears to hear the truth. Amen and amen. Well, imagine this. Michael Morton. On the morning of August 13, Michael kissed his sleeping wife, Christine, goodbye and went off to work at a local Safeway. When he came home that evening, he found that his wife had been murdered, and he was the prime suspect. Morton was tried, convicted, and sentenced to prison for nearly 25 years. It was only after the tireless work of several attorneys and DNA evidence that managed to prove Morton's innocence and send the real murderer to prison. Is this a rare thing? Do mistakes happen? Sadly, I'm told this happens over and over and over again. Well, so we're glad to have on with us a guest today. His name is David Merkowitz, and he's written a book called Wrongly Charged that speaks about this subject. And I think David O'Kay was also wrongly charged. So welcome, David. Are you there with me?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me on.
Okay, well, first, David, you wrote a book about wrongly charged, and I read some of the things on your website. So tell the folks a little bit about yourself and how you were wrongly charged, and if it indeed is a continuing thing. Go ahead.
Okay. I originally was raised in Brooklyn, New York, a big city, and I started my career as a locksmith at a very young age, at 18 years old. And in New York City, like most cities, in order to be a locksmith, you had to be licensed because you're carrying burglary tools and stuff like that that you can get into houses. My dad moved down to Florida in the early 80s, and I decided to get away from the cold weather and ventured down to Florida. And when I moved down here, I was quite surprised that Florida is one of the few states, there's only three states like it, that require no licensing of any kind to be a locksmith. So you can just buy the tools and go out and do the job. And that's good in one way, and it's bad in another way. The bad is anybody can buy these tools and, you know, just break into houses. And also it makes the business very, very competitive because there's absolutely no regulation of any kind. So
right.
When I found that out, I was like, to get in the phone book, you didn't have to show a license or anything like that. And that's how I started in South Florida. I started advertising in the Yellow Pages because back in the 80s and until the late 90s, everybody that needed a service, they picked up the local phone book, and the largest ad got the calls, and that's how I made most of my money for about 15 or 20 years in the South Florida area. But Yellow Pages became kind of obsolete. Very few people use them today. Most folks are using the Internet, and there's only one search engine that really gets any activity, and that's Google. And the sad part of that is that they have these ads on that you pay for to be online, and there's around six of them on there. So if you Google a city like Kansas City, Locksmith Kansas City, or Locksmith in the area, the top three ads get most of the activity. And the cost for these ads, when they first came out, they were like 50 cents for a click, which wasn't bad. Now today, like in the South Florida area and most major cities, to be in the top three, you can spend anywhere from as little as 10 to as much as $40 per click.
Wow.
Hard to believe. And the other problem with that is you have competitors that can click on you several times a day and run up your budget. And Google is very, very lax on, you know, giving credit on stuff like that, because if you use different phones and different IP addresses, you can, you know, continue to click on your competitors and run up their bill. So it was becoming a very, very cost. You couldn't make any more money. It was becoming very, very difficult here to make a living. So everybody was advertising with A listings in the phone book, and everybody wanted to be first to get to get the calls, because it's very, very difficult because the competition became very fierce. So I was like, after 20 years of advertising in the phone book, I didn't know what to do. You know, my phone stopped ringing. Didn't know how to come up with an idea on how to be ahead in the phone book, which no one uses anymore, how to get on the top of Google without spending $40 or $50 a click. And that's what it is now, to be in the top three in the South Florida area. So what I did was I came up with an idea. I said to myself, I could be like these other big companies. Products, they come out with a product or a service, and I can copy it. So I contacted three different attorneys, and I said, you know, this is my plan. What I want to do is use similar names of the larger companies and see if I could sort of attract some of their business away from them. And they all said to me, you know, it's not really a nice thing to do, but it's competition, and if you can get it approved by the state and they'll approve a certificate and let you use the name, then you know what? You know, you have to do what you have to do to make a living. So what happened was, we picked out, me and my partners, three or four companies that were established for about, I don't know, 15 or 20 years. And for example, there was one company, I'll just use a generic name, that was ABC Lock and Security Service. So we registered the name ABC Locksmith. And after it went through the state of Florida, they approved the name. They gave us a certificate of eligibility to use the name. So we did. And what happens is that a lot of people, when they would go on the Internet or they would go on to 411, instead of asking for ABC Lock and Security, they would just ask for ABC Locksmith. And
yeah, absolutely. That's pretty intelligent. And, you know, I can understand doing something like that because, you know, I mean, that's ridiculous. $40 a click. Man, I could put you out of business, you know what I'm saying, if you're a small guy.
And I'll tell you a little secret. Google is a very, you know, they're like, when AT&T came out with the phone books, they were the only place to go. So you either advertised with them, or too bad. Well, now that's what it is with Google. And Google's got this very interesting rule. You can use, most people use the mobile phones. Not so many people are using desktops today. You can click on the same ad up to 2 times in a day from the same IP address. And what's interesting is that if you take your telephone and you turn off the cellular data and you turn it back on, you actually generate a new IP address. You trick Google, and they'll you can do this all day long. So, I mean, if you do it every 2 minutes, they're going to catch on to it. But if you do it, you know, every half hour, you can take a $40 click and run somebody up a $500 or $800. And it's happened to me. It has happened, and they refuse to give any type of credit. Because what they don't do is allow you to block the device ID. They only allow you to block the IP address. So this became cost prohibitive. We weren't making any money. And I didn't know what to do. So this is what, that's what we did. And we did it with 3 or 4 companies. And again, I concede that it wasn't the nicest thing in the world to do. Because we were getting jobs that people thought they were getting the other company and got us. But on the other side of the coin, most of our customers were very happy. We came out, we provided the exact same service at the same or equal price, and you know, the customer actually never knew the difference. If they bought a lock, we came out, we put a lock in. So what my attorneys actually told us, the worst case scenario would you could be sued for using a similar name. And one company did try, and they actually lost the case because they said the judge ruled that if the state registered it, then, you know, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's not nice. The judge wasn't thrilled with it, but, you know, it happens every day. A company comes out with a product or service, and another company comes out with something that's close, and, you know.
Well, yeah, absolutely. It's just like when we used our mercy.com for Women's Mercy, a mercy shelter. You know, we bought up several variations of the address, you know what I mean, the Google address, so nobody else would grab something that was real, real similar. So I see what you're talking about. Back to you.
So that's what happened. So we were doing this for several years. And unfortunately, no problems. I mean, well, the only problems we would have is every once in a while, a customer would do the job by us, and then they would go into the other company and, you know, to make a key or something and say, oh, your guy put it in the lock for me. And he would say, what guy? You know, and of course the other company got angry because they lost the job to us.
Right.
So a lot of times they would tell them, make a police report. When a couple of times the police actually called us, and I said, listen, this is not your business. This is if anything, it's a civil suit. If they want to sue us, you know, for using a similar name, let them go ahead. But it's not your business to get involved in something like that. And everything was fine until 2013. What happened was one of the companies in a rich area of Palm Beach County, Florida, who just happens to do the work for the Palm Beach County Police Department and all of the, you know, the county's public works, got angry. And I guess he had a friend in the police department because obviously that's the only way something like this would have happened. And we got a telephone call on February 5th of 2013, about 10:45 in the morning. The guy called up and he says, listen, we moved into a new home and we need the lock rekeyed. And rekeyed means basically we use the same lock, we just change the tumblers inside. So I dispatched one of our independent contractors that work up in that area, and we split the jobs. That's how we do it when we don't go into that area. He knocked on the door, and they did ask him if he was from the ABC company, and he said yes, because, you know, we had that name. So they let him in. He took the lock off the door. He went to his truck and he changed the cylinder. He put it back on, he mounted it. And when he got done, they asked him, can we make a check out to you? And he says, we don't take checks, we take cash or credit card. So the guy says, no problem, I'll give you cash. And he counted out, it was about $115 in cash, and everything was fine. He tried the lock, he walked out the door, and as he was walking out to the truck, he gets knocked to the ground by 3 cops and said, now you're under arrest for burglary of an occupied dwelling, grand theft, and impersonation. And that's how the story began.
Wow. Well, that was entrapment completely. That it doesn't even seem like that's possible in a right way. Go on.
Well, you see, they contended that the reason they charged him with burglary of the occupied dwelling is because Florida has these crazy statues, and part of the burglary statue says that he went in there, they opened up the door only because they thought he was from the other company. But they knew that this would never work in a jury. If this thing would have went to trial, you know, the state attorney going in front of a jury and telling them, oh, the guy thought he was from this company, that's why I let him in, but did you pay him? Did he do the job? Everything was fine? Yeah. So there was no break-in, and
right.
The chance of getting a conviction, people on the jury are business people, and they understand that these things happen. And again, it may have not been a nice thing, but should the guy be sentenced to 10 years in state prison for using a similar name? Probably not. Yeah. So, you know, it was, but it didn't end there. This guy was really aggressive, this cop. About a week later, one of my other independent contractors that did work in the same vicinity got a call, and he said, the same police officer, we'd like you to come in for an interview. We're conducting an investigation. So he called up, and he said to me, should I go in? And I said, listen, after what happened to the other guy, I wouldn't go in. I would do the interview over the phone. If he wants, if he has a warrant, he can arrest you. If he wants to just talk to you, he can talk to you over the phone. Once you go in there, you know, police officers are allowed to lie to get you to do anything when they're conducting an investigation. Well, he didn't listen to me, and he felt, you know what, I didn't do anything wrong. He went in, and when he got there after the interview was over, they arrested him and charged him with the same three charges. And the sad part of it is both of these guys that were arrested, because the charge of burglary of an occupied dwelling is considered a violent felony, they were actually held without bonds, because the judge sees burglary of an occupied dwelling. What did he do, force his way in and hold these people? You know, that's how judges own human beings. That's what they saw. So they had to actually wait in jail for a couple of days to get a bond hearing, hire an attorney, and, you know, explain the situation to him, and then the judge set a reasonable bond. But the sad part of these things are, well, the way the system is set up right now, is unlike in a civil case. In a civil case, if I file a lawsuit against you and I win, I get to collect reasonable attorney's fees. But if you win, you get to collect also. Well, in a criminal case, it doesn't work like that. I can have you, if I'm a police officer, I can arrest you, charge you with trump charges. You still have to bail out of jail, pay the bondsman, and on top of that, pay an attorney. And even if the charges are dismissed or you're found not guilty, guess what? The state cost you all this money, no reimbursement, and a lot of people don't realize that. You lose even if you win. The life is destroyed.
Yeah, the only way that you could retain the bond money, and that with most standard things, it's 10%.
Right.
But the only way that you can, and once that 10% is paid, you know, you don't get that back. The only way that you can get around that is if you're a rich person and you could have the whole bond yourself and put up a cash bond.
Right. That's true. And, you know, but most people, when, like these guys' bonds were in excess of $20,000, and they didn't have that kind of cash to put up because they were going to need an attorney. So they, you know, they had to spend several thousand dollars. Plus, one of them spent over $20,000 in attorney's fees. And the sad part of it is that, you know, nothing came of these cases except for mine, because my case dragged on. What happened was months went by, and I knew it was sooner or later these guys were going to tell them who gave them the call and who set up the websites and everything. So I was prepared. I mean, I knew sooner or later they were going to come to me. So I hired an attorney to be prepared, and I told him the story, and he says, oh, they're not going to arrest you for that. Well, I says, well, look what they did to the other guys. And months went by, February, March, April, May, and came the month of August. On August 16th, on 2013, my attorney called me. He says, I have bad news for you. I said, what's the news? He says, I got a call from that cop, the same one in Palm Beach. There's a bench warrant for your arrest. Okay. He says, he's being nice about it. He didn't come and, you know, come after. He wants you to surrender to him. So I said, what are the charges? It's a sealed warrant. What do you mean it's sealed? I mean, what is it, a murder case? He says, well, they won't tell me what it is. You got to surrender. So I said, okay, you can tell him that it's going to be, it was on a Thursday or a Friday. He says, you can tell him it'll be Monday or Tuesday. It's not a murder case. I'm not rushing up there. I want to make some phone calls and see what I can find out. Well, fortunately, I happen to have a lot of experience in the law, and I have a friend of mine that's a well-known bail bondsman. And it's amazing. Bail bondsmen can find out anything. So he pulled up the Palm Beach County jail, and he was able to, through his sources, find out what the charges were and what the bonds were going to be and everything like that. And he called me back, and he says, "You ready for this?" I says, "Yeah." He says, "The charges are organized scheme to defraud, money laundering, and one other charge, but it was just amazing." He says, "And the bond that they're going to set is just under $20,000 for you. Major charges, second-degree felonies, punishable by up to 20 years in state prison if convicted." He says, "The good news is that the type of bond that they're requesting, they're not asking for proof of assets, because there's a certain type of bond, okay, when they issue a charge of money laundering or stuff like that, they can attach what's called a nebbia bond hold, which basically means that before you're able to post the bond, that you actually have to go to court for a hearing to show them that you got the money from a legal source." And he said, "That's not attached." So that's the good news. So I said, "Okay, great. So we'll take care of this." And what I did is, and knowing how the system...
Wait a minute. We're going to break in. We're going to hold right there, because we're getting ready to go to a station break. This is really an interesting story, and people need to be paying attention to it. So what's your website where your book's at? Your book's called Wrongly Accused.
No, it's Wrongly Charged, A Look at the Legal System. It's available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Books a Million, and my website is www.wronglycharged.com.
Folks, that's wronglycharged.com, and wherever you listen to this later on tonight in podcast, after we get off, there will be a link with the podcast directly to that website. Go over and check it out, and we're going to talk some more with him when we get back in 3 minutes. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Messiah's Branch Across the Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. Remember to support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us, men, women, and children. People from all walks of life come to us for help. You know, and I want you to consider that, again, that this is June, and we just, June 1st, we started our 18th year of doing this. So have us a mission church work. I mean, we don't get any support from any big churches or anything like that for the Wichita Mission Church. So how do we get support? Well, support used to come from mail-out newsletter, which we are going to start again soon. But the point is that all of it over a period of time, times change. We went from mail support to, people that listen to us on radio. That's what it boils down to. People that listen to us on radio is how the mission church works. So in our 18th year, it's people like you that's got us to be able to do what we do. So radio is really what I need to bring up. You know, and it was pointed out to me recently by the person that, you know, most everything we have for our ministry is by donation. And this main big computer that we have that runs mostly everything, it's almost, he pointed out, he says he thinks it's at least 8 years old. I really don't remember when he donated it, but we've been using it over and over. But it is time to replace it before it does go out. And you folks that listen to radio and support us, well, we need to upgrade that. We need to upgrade, get a better computer, a new computer, and it'll be good for another 5 or 8 years or whatever. But we need to do that. Also, our mixer board, you know, it needs to be replaced, and some other equipment in this needs to be replaced. We have been doing radio. We started radio in 2001 on shortwave, and then after shortwave, we've been on this station since 2004. And so, you know, we've got a lot of usage. We've been doing radio a long time. So I don't have any plans on stopping in the near future. You know, I'm all energized and everything. I'm going to be 62 next month. But, you know, my doctor says I'm like a 50-year-old or whatever. But the point is we're not going to quit. So we need your help. So pray about an upgrade for radio. Pray about it. We really do need to get this done. And also, people have asked, well, I thought you were going to video. Well, we was going to do some video, but then people, I have one person sent me a camera, but they didn't send all the pieces to it. There's no microphone and a couple other things to it. That has to be purchased for it. Another person was sending a digital recorder and promised it and told me that several times. That didn't come through. And so, you know, people told us they were doing things and they didn't, so it didn't happen. So, pray about it. We need to, to upgrade, the office, so to speak. Anyway, pray about it. As far as the Mission Church, you know, we're getting ready to do the summer painting and all that stuff, but for the people, we need blankets, first aid things, sleeping bags, everything that you can think of. We're out of large print King James Bible, and of course, we always need hygiene things, and socks is one of the number one things that we always need. We don't get any help, again, from any organized churches or government agencies, and it's only folks like you that supported us that now we've started our 18th year that make the Mission Church work. Yes, we care and minister people to people in a part of town where most people don't even like to drive through after dark. So why do so many people come for us for help with all this? Well, love, that's why. That's the first answer. They're treated as family. That's what's going on. We have no set guidelines like programs. The only programs I have are radio programs. People just walk in the door and ask for what they need, and if we don't have a way to fill the need, we pray with them and try and pray it in. This is why even the agencies tell their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send people to us. People have millions of dollars in their budget. Send people to a place that really has no budget. We are the last hope for so many, and folks, we are responsible to care one for another, as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps, and the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. If you don't wish to help the poor, again, consider a donation for radio airtime, and if it is for radio airtime or for radio upgrade, please mark it as that, and this is something that we really need to get done before much of the summer goes on. You can donate online or mail a check or money order. You can find all this information at prophecyhour.com or send me an email or call me. Okay, and now we're back. We're having a really good conversation with David Murkatz, and we're back. David, are you with us? And pronounce your last name for us. I want to make sure I get it right.
Murkatz.
Okay, and so you're telling us about your story about, about how you eventually got arrested. I guess that's about the point we're at in the story, right?
Yeah, well, what I also teach in the book, on a voluntary surrender, there's a lot of, normally when you get arrested, it's a very big ordeal. They take you out, they break the door down, and you can spend anywhere from 24 to 36 hours in jail, and it's a horrific experience. Even if you surrender yourself, you can. But if knowing how to do it the correct way can make a big difference. And I have chapters in the book that actually teach that, how to get out of jail without seeing a judge, unless you're arrested for a violent crime like a rape or a murder. We're talking about white-collar shoplifting, traffic offense, or something that's not major, where they set a reasonable bond. So what I did was, now that we knew that the bond was going to be under $20,000, I went and met with my good friend Mark. He prepared all the paperwork and had everything ready. See, because today on a bonding system, they don't even have to go down to the jail anymore. Everything is computerized. So if you have a rapport with a bail bondsman, unfortunately, people laugh when I say that, but it's something good to know. People get arrested for traffic stops. It's good to have their business card. You never know when you're going to get falsely accused of something. So he prepared all the paperwork. I gave him his fee. And he says, now when you go to surrender yourself, he says, as soon as it's placed in the system, since he did all the paperwork and he knows what all the charges are and what the bond amounts are, he just has to press a button, pretty much. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what happened. I had a friend of mine take me up to the jail on April 21st at about a little after 10 in the morning. And it was so funny because when I got there, I said to the woman at the desk, I'm here to surrender myself. And she looked at me like, what do you mean surrender yourself? Because, you know, most people don't do that. And also she looked at me and says, you don't look like, you know, type of person that would be being arrested.
No,
so they came out, and the you know, they take you inside, and then the process begins. You know, you can sit there anywhere from 14 to 18 hours. But the police officer at the station was really nice, and I explained what was going on to him, and he was kind of shocked. So he said, okay, this is what it is. And they put you in a cell, and when they called my name within like an hour and a half and read me the charges, my bondsman immediately sees it right in his computer system because they're linked to the jail. So instead of sitting there for 2 or 3 days, I was already out at before 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I was home by 3:30. It was amazing. You know, so knowing how to do it the right way and knowing how the system works, if you ever have this type of problem, is the difference between sitting there for 2 or 3 days and being mistreated or getting in and out in a few hours. So,
all right, let me break in for a minute. I absolutely agree with you about the bondsman thing. Now, you know, I've been a saved person for 28 years, haven't been in trouble, but, you know, in my younger days, being an outlaw biker, of course, you know, we come to know these things. And that is the number one thing. It's just as important or more important than having a good attorney is having a good bondsman. And a bondsman can even sway a judge to lower. I've seen a bondsman sway a judge and lower bonds and all kinds of things like that. They really are the guy to get you out. And having contact with them, if you know about a charge like that, that's absolute. You're just absolutely right. So you're hitting things just right on the button. Back to you.
Yes. See, and I knew this guy for years because I had some family member that had a problem. And, you know, his number, it was an easy number to memorize. And you know what? Because it's electronic now, where they don't actually even have to go down, when you have a rapport with them, unless it's a major charge with a big $300,000 bond, if it's under $50,000 bond, which most of them are, unless it's a major crime, they'll even bond you out on the phone with a signature today. Because let's be honest, if you don't come in and take care of them, they revoke the bond, and then they'll, you know, they'll come get you, and that's the end of it. So most of them are very nice, and they're very helpful. And if any other charges get added when you're with a bondsman, instead of paying for cash, you can pay for cash, but if they ever change any of the charges, you actually have to be rearrested again. A lot of people don't know that. If they up a charge and the bond is more, since you didn't use a bondsman, you have to actually go back in and be rearrested and go through the system again. But if you use a bondsman, he can just rewrite the bond and process it through the system, and they can avoid a rearrest for the charge. So there's a lot of advantages to using a bail bondsman, because what they charge you with isn't always what happens. For example, and it's interesting, because in the first guy's case, when they arrested him, they charged him with burglary of an occupied dwelling, grand theft, and I don't know what he stole, because he didn't take anything, and impersonation. And the funny part of it is, when the formal charges were filed after the state reviewed it, the one charge that they dropped was the impersonation charge, and I found that amusing, because that was what you would think that they were upset about, using the similar name.
I'm sorry to laugh, but that doesn't make sense. It seems like that's the only small charge. I mean, the only charge that could possibly be sticking.
And they dismissed that before. You know how when you get arrested, they police charge you, and then the state reviews which charges they're going to keep, if they're going to up, or they're going to down file. Well, those charges on all three of us were filed as non-filed. So the only charges they kept were the serious charges, because the impersonation charge also probably would have not stuck, because, again, we registered the names. We had them for 5 years. And the funny part of it is, like I told the attorney, you know, I said, if the state didn't like the idea that we were using a similar name when we sent it in, they could have said, no, don't use the name. It's too close to the other person's name.
Right.
You can't use it. But Florida is a money-hungry state, because under the Fictitious Name Act, if you read the statute, it's very funny. It says registration under this act does not reserve the name against future use. So basically what they're telling you is, if you're going to register it as a fictitious name, which is exactly what the other companies did, rather than incorporating the name or trademarking the name, it's not yours. Anybody can use it. And that's exactly what these guys did. They didn't incorporate the name. They used one of these generic corporations, and they DBA'd it as what we did. So they had no more rights to the name than we did. The only thing is they were using the name for 20 years, and we came along and just started using a name that was similar. And basically, we were infringing. It was a trademark infringement. That's what it amounts to, stealing business from them by using a similar name.
It's still just civil. You know, that's civil. But your problem seems to be with the fact that this company or these guys knew a police officer that would act out of bounds.
And that's what he did, and he got an award for it. They actually gave him an award, and I don't know what he got an award for, because when it was all said and done, the funny part of the whole thing was the two guys that were charged, all charges were completely dismissed. $20,000 to $30,000 in legal fees later, that's what happened. When it came to me, they were kind of like they had egg on their face because, you know, they wanted something. I mean, now, to take my case to trial with these kind of serious money laundering charges, my attorney wanted $100,000.
Wow.
But, yeah, because you're talking about a money laundering. And he said to me, listen, he says, if God forbid a jury doesn't like you, and it can happen, and you're found guilty, you're looking at 20 years in state prison. He says, I would take a plea. I says, well, I'm not going to plead guilty to these charges. He goes, listen, they're willing to plead this down to a petty theft charge with adjudication withheld and a small fine and a little probation. And so you won't, you know, in other words, adjudication withheld, it's a misdemeanor on top of it. He says, I would do that. He says, rather than gamble with a trial, he goes, they want something. I said, so what's going to be the final thing? Is you're going to plead guilty to petty theft, even though you didn't do anything, and you're going to pay a small fine to a few victims that thought they were overcharged. They made a complaint. And you'll do probation for, a year or so. And if you stay out of trouble, adjudication's withheld. It can be expunged from the rag. He says, you know what? I'm not going to put up any more money. As much as it kills me, I will do that and that's one of the chapters I have in the book, why people plead guilty to crimes they didn't commit.
Okay, let me break in here, and I probably know what you're going to say, but I just want to give the folks something. Folks, it's like this. This is the way that your system is built up to work right now. You, first off, if everybody went to court for a jury trial, everything would shut down because there would be so many cases they couldn't budge. So they work with the plea bargain system. Well, with the plea bargain system, they do just like they did to this man. They overcharge. They charge the biggest thing. They might charge you with murder, and they only want a misdemeanor out of you. I know that's an extreme, but it's almost like that because they want you to plead to something, and they try to scare you into it. Well, what if you do go and a jury doesn't like you? Well, then you go to jail for 20 years. Well, that is a reality, but that's the kind of force that they use to get you to even plead guilty to something that you didn't even do. Back to you.
Well, yeah, and, you know, the thing about it is that let's say you do take the trial and you do win. You're still out the $100,000. If they come back with a not guilty verdict and I paid $100,000, yes, I look like the greatest guy in the world. But the problem is I can't sue the state for the $100,000 that I spent in legal fees. So that's another consideration, and that's why I said the laws have to be changed. Because if a prosecutor knew that if they dropped the charges against you after they knew they were filing phony charges, or you were found not guilty on all counts, that they would have to reimburse you for all costs, a lot of these things would never happen in the way the system works now. People would, you know, they wouldn't say, well, I'm not going to charge this guy and make the state have to pay back all this money. But they can get away with that. So, and that's why the system is, it has flaws to it, and, you know, it scare you. And the sad part of it is I have a chapter in my book about a guy that lived a couple of miles down the street from me that actually didn't take a plea. And he never did anything wrong in his life before. He was involved in a traffic accident with no alcohol. It was a true accident. And unfortunately, it was a fatality. And he stopped. But he was speeding when he did it. But, he, you know, again, it was an accident. And they offered him 5 years in state prison. And he said, I'm not going to go to jail for 5 years for an accident. And unfortunately, he didn't take the plea. he lost the case at a jury trial. He appealed and he lost again. And the judge, instead of sending him to a reasonable sentence of 5 years, he gave him 15 years in state prison on a first offense. Because
wow.
he dared to exercise his right to a trial and didn't take the plea bargain. They don't give you the 5 years. They gave him 15 years, the maximum penalty, and he had a he just got out about 6 months ago. He spent 13 years in prison for a traffic accident. And yes, somebody got killed, but it was an accident.
Right, I understood. Probably not worth 15 years, but I won't say without looking at the case, but I agree with you. So your book is a defensive book to prepare people, the common person that doesn't think they'll ever get in trouble for anything that's legal, but it could be there to help them, right?
Right. See, what I wrote is I wrote my story and the conclusion, but I wrote chapters on what to do on a traffic stop, how to get out of the traffic. I've never paid a traffic ticket in my life. I teach people how to get out of traffic tickets. And even if you do get it, how you can beat them in court. Very interesting on that. I also teach you how to get out of jail without seeing a judge. And most important section is for the people that did do something wrong in their life. How to seal or expunge a criminal record. Because if you got picked up for shoplifting, or they don't list it on your record as shoplifting, they list it as grand theft. There's ways in most states to have it expunged from the record, or if you live in a state that it can't be expunged, you can have your civil rights restored so that you can get any professional license again. Because I went as a younger person, I had something happen. I did something stupid when I was 18, 19 years old, and I had something on my record, and it really came back to haunt me, and I got it taken. I had my civil rights restored, and it actually allowed me to have everything that I wanted to have. So I teach that in the book also, how to get your civil rights restored or get a case sealed or expunged. Because what happens to a lot of people, there was a guy here in Florida that got arrested for armed kidnapping and rape. And he spent 90 days in jail before they felt like doing a DNA charge. And after they did the test, they found out he was the wrong person. Unfortunately, he got freed, but if you look him up now, it says armed kidnapping and rape on a minor, case dismissed. Now, even though the case was dismissed, if he goes for a job, a lot of people hold that against you because they always have that thing in the back of their head that, maybe he did it. Just because the case was dismissed doesn't mean he didn't do it. So he can have that sealed or expunged so it'll never show up. And that's a good thing to know how to do.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Very good. So, again, the name of the book is?
It's Wrongly Charged, A Look at the Legal System. It's available at Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Books a Million, and it's $17.95 for the hard, and it's $7.99 for a download ebook.
Well, amen. That's sounds like a great book. I really, you're a good speaker, and your enjoyment to have on radio. I really appreciate you being on with us today. And I encourage everybody to get a copy of the book. It sounds like it's something great to have laying around. Any parting thoughts?
It was nice doing the show with you. And if any of your listeners want to email me with any questions, my email is wronglycharged@hotmail.com. And if they have anything I can help them with, I've helped a lot of people with minor things, even though I'm not an attorney. I've won a landmark case against the state of Florida in 1989 on my own. And it made Westlaw.
Wow.
So, I have a lot of experience, and that's why I decided to take a bad experience that I had and turn it into something to help other people.
Well, I really do appreciate you, and it sounds like you are trying to help, and it's something that everybody needs, because everything you're talking about is true blue. That's the way the system's set up, and, it's not a question of trying to beat the system, but how to exist within it. But so anyway, thanks for being on with me, brother. I appreciate it. You be blessed.
Okay.
Thanks for having me. Well, folks, Wrongly Charged. This is a really good story, but the thing about this story is he's telling you how to get a book. These things that he's talking about, are true. Of course, I haven't been in trouble for many, many, many years. That was a whole other life when I was unsaved. And most of you know that I was an outlaw biker, so we had brushes with the law, but that was, you know, 28, 30 years ago, whatever. But this is a good thing, because even a legal, law-abiding citizen can fall into something. Yeah, you might think, well, that was kind of dubious of him to have, you know, the names almost the same. Well, you understand why he did it. I'm not justifying what he did, but I'm telling you that he sounds like he's got some good information for you. Okay, on another note, today, well, I don't know if you folks, a lot of you folks watch the news, but did you watch the Comedy Circus today, as I'll call it? This guy, this is the guy that should have been arrested for all the lies and the leakings and all the things that he did and accused the president of being a liar or whatever. This guy gives us a picture with the story that he tells. He leaked the information about his memo, which really didn't mean anything, to provoke a special prosecutor. You know, that in itself is dubious. And it's just a tie, because what the poor little crying liberals like Comey doesn't like the president. And you know what? I'm with Michael Snyder. We need to start speaking up and standing up to the liberals. Otherwise, they're going to rule the country. And we have one chance under President Trump. We need to stand up and be with him. We need to pray for him. You need to pray for him all the time. I told you that while we were going into the election. And now we're even seeing things come forward like there's really proof, you know, in Virginia and other places, like I think it was Virginia, where they proved there were 5,000 illegal aliens on the rolls that voted in the last election. Well, you know, Virginia is a swing state. Those 5,000 votes could have very well have swung the election in favor of Hillary Clinton, and that's what they banked on. But you know what I said? I said if Trump wins, it's going to have to be by an overwhelming majority. When you start adding up all of the illegal votes that were done in this country, America did stand up. They stood up and voted. But you know, it's such a crying shame that there are so many people in this country that don't vote at all. You know, but the good needs to stand up. You need to stand up, or you're not going to have a country. You know, right now, it's critical. As we got a small preview, and I call it small, a small preview that comes from the hatred from the left, a small preview of what they want to do with gay and lesbian rights and take away your rights as a Christian, as a saved, born again person. You know, they want to take away those rights. They hate you. They want this country to be like the other countries in the world where the Muslims just go crazy, and it doesn't matter. They just want the vote. In pain right now because, you know, we're thinking of these women that are hitting the streets because there's no place for them to go. I'm not saying that I want you to fund a shelter, you know, because we have to get a building again and all that. But what I am saying is that pray for them. Pray for a means, and pray, give us a means that we can help them find some places, something. But pray for them. But lift up the Wichita Mission Church. We do need your support. We need it ongoing. And, yeah, we're getting ready to do our paint and remodel and everything. We're getting ready to restart our newsletter. And so the Father has smiled on us, but we still need your support. You folks over there in Wichita, we do really need your support for clothing. Bring us your loose clothing and food and all of those things, because this is a place to help. But pray about it. And as far as radio goes, folks, we really need to do something about radio. We need a few thousand dollars, I'll just leave it like that, in order to change the equipment and everything so we can bring you quality radio so we can keep up with all these other folks. And it's just a question of keeping up. It's just being able to stay on the air. All right. Well, remember, there is only one God. He is your Father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His Son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repentant sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Remember, always, always, always be a blessing to others. Pray for the peace of Jerusalem, please. That's like praying for Messiah's return. And Lord our God, Father King Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and that his face shines upon you, and he's gracious to you, and he gives you peace. like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.